Oh, do you want to see a little guy?
I would love to see a little guy.
It is a Magic the Gathering little guy, but...
That is okay. As long as you don't need me to be able to use them in a game, I will happily look at a Magic the Gathering little guy.
Now, where is the dang picture of it?
Also, Emily, I'm gonna be sending you the pictures that I came up with for this episode in our chat after the fact so that you can also see them, because they're very good.
Right, okay. So the next set is a Western set, and one of them they're doing like a wolf and cub Mandalorian style thing with a guy who's protecting a little guy.
Okay.
But the little guy is like a baby cactus.
Baby cactus. Aww.
Also, the fall set is going to be chock-a-block full of little guys because it's based off of Secrets of Nim and Redwall.
Yeah, I saw those. You were posting about that in the Gem Jam Discord.
Yeah. And yeah. It's like, because like all this past week, it's been previews for the Fallout decks, which I don't care about because I don't go to Fallout. But then yeah. It's like, oh, also, by the way, here's basically Mrs. Brisby.
They just like, Magic the Gathering really just loves filing the serial numbers off of something so they can make something that is still vaguely pop culturally recognized.
Yeah.
Like, Tanner has shared the artwork for the Outlaws, for the Outlaws of Thunder Junction Commander deck. And I cannot overestimate how much this is serial numbers filed off Magic, Western, Mandalorian, and Grogu.
Yes. But that's the thing I kind of like about Magic, is that they can really do whatever they want, setting-wise. Like, the Fortniteification of Magic has been going on forever because Magic is a setting, exists in a setting where they can do whatever genres they want, and then mash them together and see what happens. And as long as they don't fall ass backwards into Orientalism real heavy, which they had a history of doing, but it looks like they're working on not doing that anymore.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
There is a 4-hour and 20-minute long, nice, video nice. From Space 8 Rack about the entire Cons of Tarkir block, and both like all its successes and its failures and how that resonates with issues going on today, but a good chunk of it. And also then they released just like an unedited raw footage of them talking about some people who were basically the unofficial cultural consultants for their video about Tarkir and the Orientalism about it, because it's vaguely Central Asian, and like each of the five factions are based off of a different like Central Asian concept, but like very stereotypically. So, like, these are vaguely Siberian, and these people are vaguely Mongol horde, and these people are allegedly Ottoman, but they look a lot more like ancient Persian, and then these people are Shaolin monks, and these people are spooky, secretive people living in the jungles of darkest India.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's a lot of
uh-oh.
But this is not a Magic the Gathering podcast, and I didn't have an idea for a Magic the Gathering podcast, but this is not that podcast, so... So instead, let's talk about punching actors.
Speaking of Redwall.
How's the speaking of Redwall?
The little quip that we start the episode out with. You get to open the episode, Tanner.
No, I was trying to figure out how Redwall factors into Glee.
The part where Harper is like, Nella, you drink your coffee like a cute little mouse. You just kind of hold it with both hands and you sip out of the little sip cup.
God, that's so true. We should have an episode where we figure out the Glee characters' Redwall sonas, or just their fursonas.
We will have to bring in outside help because I am very out of the loop with fursonas and with furry stuff and scaly stuff.
I have not been a furry for a long time. Truly, I was only a furry for like a year, and that was to get a boy to notice me, and then I moved away, so it was really all for nothing.
Just go ahead and grab a chair and listen now. As we riff the show, Tanner and Christine are gonna figure out why we love this show. Better grab your golden stars and slushies, cause you're listening. You're listening to Loser Like Me. Loser Like Me.
Hello and welcome back to Lose Like Me, a podcast where now that we're talking about Glee again, we're actually talking about the Glee Project again. I'm Tanner, and I want to heal, I want to feel what I thought was never real. I want to let go of the pain I've held so long, somewhere I belong.
My name is Christina, and we don't want to be a damn karaoke show.
Too bad, this is Glee!
Literally. Wait until you get context for that quote, listeners.
It doesn't actually help that much.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, we're here today to talk about season 2 of The Glee Project, episode 3.
Even though this is our fourth episode, because our first episode was the zeroth episode.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's Vulpenamermaldi
2! Yeah. And we start out with Harper telling Nellie that when she drinks out of her little cup, it looks like a little mouse. You're just taking a little sip with both hands. And I'm just like, that's precious. Because sometimes you just want to be like a little mouse from like Redwall or something with like your big mug, and you're just taking little sips of soup or whatever out of your big mug. Especially in the winter months. It's very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And then Robert Ulrich comes in to tell everyone, hello, this week it's vulnerability.
Get sad, get real sad.
Yeah. And this guest, your guest mentor for this week is someone who wrote the book on vulnerability.
And then Abraham is like, oh, Chris Colfer wrote a book.
Chris Colfer has written several books. He has written many books. And also the song this week is My Life Would Suck Without You, which is, you know, the song from season 1, episode 13, where they were all happy about having won sectionals, and it was a joyful moment, and not a moment of vulnerability, unless you were Emma Pillsbury being kissed by the menace Will Schuster.
Yeah, and Charlie is aware of this, and yes. I'm glad they let Charlie's confessional stay in, because Charlie has got, like, my first thought is, why? You can only be so vulnerable to a bass line goes, boots, 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 boots.
Yeah.
You know?
And just like they have previously, they assign solos for the homework number by committee. Lily is being more assertive with what solos she does or does not want.
Mario is also, he wants line 3, but he also wants line 11. And Michael picked line 3. And he's like, man, you can just have line 3. And Mario's like, well, maybe I want line 11. And they're all like, oh.
Yeah.
Drama. Reality show drama.
Yeah, reality show drama. Watch these show choir kids fight over lines of music.
Does that actually happen in real life, though?
I mean, never having been in a group that does solos by committee, I cannot confirm or deny. But yeah. And so they all show up for homework performance. And the guest mentor this week, it's Corey!
I have a lukewarm take.
Yeah?
Corey should have been the mentor for last episode.
That is true. Corey has done a lot of improving of his dance skill in his time on Glee.
And he would have been able to help them figure out, oh, here's how you break out of your shell. Here's how you, like, lose focus and just let the music move you. And also figure out how to pick up choreography when you're 10 feet tall and all leg.
Oh man, could you imagine Corey helping Tyler with dance moves?
Oh no, that would have been so nice.
It would have been very nice.
They should have had Corey be the mentor, but also let him be a guest choreographer, and then they could have called it Choreography.
Hey!
You know what? Corey should have just hosted the Glee Project.
But then it would have been a healthy show, and healthy shows don't make good reality television, Tanner.
Yeah.
Also, Lily May says, Corey Monteith is a lot more attractive a person. And if you listen closely while watching the episode, you can hear Leah Michelle firing up her mind lasers in the distance.
Here's the thing about how hot Corey Monteith is, though, is that it looks like even Blake is drooling a little bit. And that says something, because there's no... Tyler's the only openly queer person, and they'd say nothing about whether, like, who they are into.
And Corey gives everyone some very good advice. Like, the way to be vulnerable as an actor is to find a commonality between yourself and your character, to find yourself in them, so that way you can make the emotion feel real.
The Strasberg method.
Is it?
Yeah, like, Lee Strasberg was the famous acting coach. He taught Marilyn Monroe, and he was like, you gotta dig deep and find a personal connection in your life, and then bring that to your characters.
Cool. Didn't know that. I've never acted.
And then, also, he, like, ended up kind of being Marilyn's surrogate father. And also, he walked her down the aisle during her third wedding? Or was it second wedding? I think it was second wedding. To Arthur Murray. Arthur Murray wedding. He walked her down the aisle.
Okay.
Me and Lindsay took a weekend where we just ended up doing a whole bunch of research on Marilyn Monroe.
I'm just picturing, like, the two of you, like, having a research weekend, like, going to, like, a cabin or something with a strong Wi-Fi connection and just, like, sitting there, like, looking out over this wonderful vista and just, like, ankle deep in Wikipedia.
See, the thing is, that's not how it started. I just went over to hang, and then we, like, the conversation turned to the fanfic, and somehow Marilyn Monroe got brought up, and we were talking about what if Marilyn Monroe had survived her death, and then it got so in-depth that we were like, this is too big of a thing to put, like, to force inside Marvel. This is its own thing. And then it got real weird, because trying to figure out, who would Marilyn Monroe end up marrying if she did live? Would she go back to someone? Would she find someone new? Who is single at this time? Or do we want to break up a marriage? Da-da-da, etc., etc. And then it's like, have to pull out the clip of Carrie Fisher doing the Hollywood incest chart to figure out what the hell's going on at this time. Anyway,
Time For My Life Would Suck Without You. It's the kind of thing where it's like, for the vulnerability week, you would have thought they would have done, like, I don't know, like a minor key or like an acoustic version of My Life Would Suck Without You. But it's just everyone looking real sad and solemn as they sing this upbeat pop song by Kelly Clarkson.
You know what it... You've seen School
bad,
of Rock, right?
But,
have you seen School of Rock?
I have actually not. I need to, but I have not.
Okay. There's this scene where they're trying to... You know the premise of School of Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a scene where Jack Black, he takes the kids to the place where they're auditioning for Battle of the Bands, and they got there too late. And so he convinces the people running it that all of these kids are dying. And then the judges look outside, and they see all the kids just, like, moping and languishing against the van, and, like, just lying on the ground sadly, dejectedly. And they agree to let them have a shot. And so Jack Black runs out and he's like, we're in. And they're like, yeah. And he's like, no, get down, you're dying. And so they all get sad again. One of them just like slumps over face down on the ground. Anyway, this whole song has that energy.
Yeah. Like everyone gets like single lines in the verses and then they end up all singing the chorus together in unison. And at the end of the song, they all just end up standing together in a line. They're like, some of them are, like, holding shoulders. They just look concerned. Eileen is holding Allie up, cradling her princess style.
I missed that. What the heck?
I got it. And they're singing at the same microphone. It's like, that kind of thing, like, definitely would have been, like, pre-planned ahead of time by then.
Oh, yeah, so,
like,
absolutely. I do want to know who pitched it.
Yeah. I wonder if it was, like, Eileen to be like, yeah, I bet I can lift you. But yeah. So they sing good, and Corey hands out really nice notes. He's like, Abraham, like, you're doing good, but you need to, like, reach for the emotion less. And he says to Lily, like, there's a part where you were singing and you were looking so solemn, and then instead of, like, staying, you know, like, solemn and contemplative, you, like, did a hair push, then you made it sexy. And he's like, you didn't need to make it sexy. And he's like, Allie, push your belt less. And she's like, okay.
Yeah. Because, again, it was the same issue this week that she had last week, where she was like, I'm going to win the Tony for this. And it's like, no, you're going to win the Tony for an actual Tony award-winning song.
Yes, yeah.
Appreciate that you're willing to pull out all the stops all the time. You do not need to do it for this.
Yes, yeah. And he mentions, like, Harper, you had good eye contact, good job connecting. And he's like, Nelly, you did a good job with the intensity, and you hit the high note really well in your section. And so he picks Nelly for best. And Nelly's like, oh my god! And I'm like, yay, Nelly!
You're like, whoa, Nelly.
I bet she's never heard that joke before.
Not from us. I did my one. We each get to say it once, and I've already burned it.
And then Robert reveals the group number, which is going to be Everybody Hurts by REM. And it's going to be a PSA about teen bullying.
Remember how last year was a PSA, too?
Yeah, and there's going to be no choreography this week, but Eric is going to come in to talk to them about their own experiences with being bullied.
He would know.
Which I just wrote down in my notes, because, like, we go straight into Eric talking to them about everything, which I just titled in my notes as Relive Your Trauma! Or, depending on what Emily thinks works better, relive your trauma! Because it's just everyone sitting in, like, the rec room area and being, like, really, really sad.
We're in a sharing circle. Everybody come on and form a circle. Why? It just helps.
Yeah. How much do we want to talk about what everyone discloses about their experiences with bullying?
I mean, we don't have to get super deep, like... I'm going to assume that they just, like, everyone shared something and we got a highlight reel on the show, which is pretty much essentially what happened in the first season.
Yeah.
Except the first season, I don't know how much they used that to mess with people on the show based on what they did not show. Like, I don't think they used anything here to give anyone a villain edit necessarily. I will give some people a villain edit.
Yeah.
No, that's, maybe that's a bit mean. Okay, the Cliff's Notes of it. Tyler felt isolated, which, like, yeah, could have guessed that.
For being a part of a lot of diverse categories of people in a community that
half
was black, not...
half white, Jewish, and trans, and they didn't know anyone who was exactly like them, so they never knew where they fit.
Yes. Harper bullied for her mom's drug usage and abuse.
Yes.
Or her mom's drug abuse, not Harper being abused.
Abraham was raised by two women, and so even though he was straight, he had feminine attributes, and so kids called him a fag. And I'm surprised that they did actually let that one through.
Mm-hmm. Blake was bullied for being short and skinny, and he didn't stand up for a kid who got bullied.
And he was so traumatized by that. And...
yeah.
Man, I'm trying real hard not to read the real-life situations that you got yourself embroiled into your time on the Glee Project, but it is difficult.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even have the reality art distinction that we have on Glee when talking about stuff about, say, Puck or Will. This is just Blake Jenner.
Yep. And so Eileen, because she is Muslim, was called a terrorist in post-Bush America.
Yeah. And Lily Mae was the bully.
Yes. She was the bully in middle school, and she spent a lot of time apparently threatening other teen girls to stay away from her and her group or their lives were going to become a living hell. And then watching the movie Mean Girls was her call to Jesus moment that changed her perspective.
And, like, a lot of people called her a faker for this. Like, I saw a lot of posts saying how, oh, she just made that up. Like, no one... Mean Girls isn't that deep a movie to make you figure out. And it's like, maybe it's not that deep, but I can definitely see someone, like, recognizing themselves in the terrible things that Regina George does and going, oh no. Especially in, because she says this happens in 8th grade, she still was not done baking. And so, yeah, like, yeah, that would have had a much more emotional impact on her than someone who was a little older.
Yeah. And my next note here was, Eric thinks it's going to be a good video, and I'm scared.
Yeah, he's just like, wow, thanks, this is real inspiring. Goodbye!
Yeah.
And everyone just, like, stuck in a huddle after, and so like, well, I guess we're all sad together now, but at least we're together?
Yeah. And then we see real quick vocal practice. A lot of people get good notes from Nikki. I didn't write them all down. She's like, Allie, like, you're singing Everybody Hurts Too Happy. And Allie's like, I always do my best to be positive. And Nikki's like, maybe you should just try being sad sometimes. Try showing that you're sad. And Allie's like, okay, note taken, and adjusts her performance. And in Mario's time in the booth, he is... I couldn't tell this myself because obviously, you know, like, not there. I was not there when they were recording it, obviously. But Nikki says that Mario is getting a little bit flat and he needs to stay on top of the pitch. And he's like, I didn't think... I expected better of myself as a classically trained singer. I don't hear myself being flat, but I'll try to correct. Along those lines.
Technically, he doesn't say all of that stuff, because you obviously were going to give him a much more charitable reading than Nikki does, but
yeah.
He does pretty much just say, I am classically trained, and I can see how that came off as, I can't be pitchy, I'm classically trained. Whereas later in the episode, he will say that what he meant was, I can do better, I am classically trained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, this is a situation where he did not come off the way he meant to.
Yeah, yeah.
Eileen sounds great.
Yeah, Eileen sounds great.
Nelly also sounds great. For Nelly's mentor session, it is basically a similar thing to what Corey said before the homework assignment, which was, you just gotta dig deep and find, like, that sad part of you that resonates.
Mm-hmm. And, like, Nelly also discloses that when they were recording this, yesterday had been the anniversary of her sister's death, and, like...
Which means that when she performed would have been the anniversary.
Oh, do you mean
the homework
performing?
Assignment?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure they did the homework assignment the next day was the mentoring session, so yeah, she would have been channeling that during the assignment.
Yeah. And also, I like... Obviously, like, they don't put it in the episode, so we cannot confirm or deny that this happened, but I like to imagine that Corey and Nelly probably had a good talk about, like, grief and that kind of a thing. Because I feel like that's the kind of thing that Corey would talk about and help with. But yeah. So it's good. We will not see Corey again in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's time for video shoot.
So here, I know you're going to have a lot of opinions about this video shoot. So I'm just going to say my main piece real quick.
Yeah.
I think that, once again, this video shoot is conceptually flawed. Because so they're like, ooh, this is a PSA for teens bullying. And I'm pretty sure PSA stands for pretty stressful actions. I forgot. I could not think of an A word.
Pretty stressful assault.
But yeah, so the concept is that they're getting bullied. But also in some scenes, they're getting bullied. And other scenes, they are the bullies. And I feel that, like, showing them, like, back-to-back-to-back flip-flopping between being mean to each other and being, like, being mean at a person and getting meaned to, that's grammar. The constant flip-flop between being a bully and being a victim for these characters, it doesn't really say anything interesting about the cycle of violence or whatever. It just looks like it's constantly, it breaks the suspension of disbelief because it's constantly changing scenes and changing contexts, and it's like, so, is this person supposed to be the bully, or is, like, has something happened? Has this changed? When is this taking place? What's going on? Like, elaborate on this, please, someone.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's another situation where I feel like no matter what they did, something would not have landed just because it's a badly made music video.
Yeah. It's almost like Eric White does a lot more video directing for ads than he does for music videos. But yeah, I guess more specifically, we see, like, for Nellie's scene of being bullied, she's, like, sitting at the lunch table and working in her journal or homework or whatever, and the bullies are throwing things at her. And then for Lily's scene of being bullied, they're talking about her and laughing at her and saying mean things as she looks at her cell phone. And Robert and Nikki comment that she's missing lip syncing. Like, she is being distracted by the mean things that are being said about her by the fellow contestants who are playing the bullies, and that they are distracting her from lip-syncing properly. And they're like, lip-syncing is like 95% of what we do on Glee. She needs to be able to lip-sync. Which is, you know, fair, but, like, also. Yeah. The next scene that they practice is Michael being bullied for talking to Harper, who is also a bully in the scene. And Blake is playing the main bully. And he is, and I quote from, I forget if it was a fellow contestant or one of the judges who said this, but he is scary good as a bully.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. But then in the same sentence, they also say, like, oh, and Michael is learning really quickly how to act. And I think one of the contestants is like, oh, man, like Blake is saying something to Michael that's getting him really messed up.
Okay, so it's Eileen. Eileen oh, okay. says something like, oh, it looks like Blake's actually being mean to Michael. I need someone to do that to me. And then it pans over to Lily Mae, who gives her a side eye.
Oh boy. I miss the part of Eileen saying, like, wow, I need someone to say mean things to me to be a bully, because that will recontextualize a lot of my notes.
Yeah, it's... We're going to get there pretty quick.
Yeah.
Let's just try and stay linear.
Yeah. The next one is of Mario being bullied.
Oh, right. Ugh.
The bully characters kind of just, like, harass him from behind, and Charlie is playing one of the bullies, and there's a part where, like, they kind of, like, run in front of Mario, and Charlie steals the cane out of his hand.
Yeah.
And the others, the judges are like, did you tell him to do that? I didn't tell him to do that. And this is unacceptable and dangerous.
Yes. And good on the judges, for once. I feel weird saying that the judges are saying things that are correct in these past few episodes, but they immediately stop, they say cut, and they say, like, this is not a direction you were given, so you should not do that.
Yeah. And Charlie is like, shit.
Yeah. And he apologizes to Mario. The other thing, though, like, on the flip side, in Charlie's defense, because we know he's autistic, we know he's on the spectrum, and they just told him, for these past, like, 3 weeks, they've been saying, be yourself, just go with the flow, vibes it all. And so no one explicitly said, don't take the cane. Mm-hmm. And Charlie probably, like, I don't know if he just, hang on, trying to pick my words.
I think this was, he did not intend for it to be as malicious and harmful as it was.
Yeah, because he was never told don't do this, so he saw no reason not to do this. And then, like, after they say he shouldn't have done it, he understands that it was wrong to do, but it's almost like it doesn't click why. Like, you can tell in his expression, he's like, I know I screwed up, but you can kind of tell he doesn't quite understand why it was a problem. And I think he was assuming that because this was, like, a professional situation, that Mario wouldn't be Mario would still be safe even if he didn't have the cane. Like, clearly Charlie didn't realize that the cane is an extension of the blind person's body at that point.
Yes.
And he was probably just thinking, okay, well, we've got all these extras and we've got all the directors and the judges and everything, and it's just one scene. And I've seen Mario do stuff without his cane before, so it's probably fine. Like, that's probably all the stuff that's going on in his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, he did also, like, in explaining his actions, he was also thinking, or he did say that he was thinking, like, yeah, my mindset was just like, we are doing this for rehearsal. We are on a stage. Like, this is a safer environment than it actually ended up being.
Yes. Again, because, like, they stress how dangerous it is, which is true, but it is more so, in my opinion, is a matter of the respect. And it yes. never occurred to Charlie that that could be disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't me trying to, like, make excuses for Charlie. It's just saying where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And just as other people working with disabled people need to be given proper direction to properly respect a disabled person,
mm-hmm.
if you are working with someone who is on the spectrum, you might need to be aware of the fact that you need to give them explicit directions so that they do the thing, they don't do things that you explicitly don't want them to do.
Yes, this is true. Are we ready for the next one?
I have a note here that says it's so sad but so effective, but it's clearly separate from the cane scene, so I don't know who this is talking about.
Okay, so I will keep going then.
Okay.
Tyler sits on a bench and looks sad. That is what they do.
Yeah, because I don't think they had the courage to do anything that was, like, explicitly transphobic. Or maybe they were the people who said, maybe at some point production said, hey, maybe we shouldn't be explicitly transphobic in the Tyler scene. And they're like, yeah, which is, on the one hand, like, okay, good that you don't just jump that on them. But also mm-hmm. it means that it really is kind of a nothing scene. It's just Tyler going, huh.
Yeah.
The day is long.
Yeah. Allie gets papers knocked off her lap while she is wheeling through the halls of a school. Abraham, who I noted in the scene, does not have the red streak in his hair.
But he does have it later during the callback session, so it must have been a temporary dye.
Yeah. Abraham gets slammed into a wall. And then...
Oh, also, Michael gets to punch Blake in the gut. That was fun.
Oh, okay, cool. Vengeance. Then we get to the scene of Eileen being bullied.
Yeah.
And everyone is kind of, like, standing in a circle and yelling at her. And her lead bully...
It's the classic bully circle.
Yes. This circle is harmful. And the lead bully is Lily, who punches Eileen... Seems to, like, she punches Eileen in the face. Eileen hits the ground, and Lily starts yelling swears and slurs at Eileen as she's, like gripping her by the shoulders and, like slamming her into the ground. Like, I don't even know what she was saying, so I can't even... I can't even say what the curses were.
Yeah, there's a lot of screaming going around. The only thing I could make out that Lily said was, you gonna terrorize me, bitch? They also bleep a lot of stuff.
Yeah, this is a lot of bleeping. And it is also a lot of violence.
Yeah.
And, like, the producers are also, the judges are also aghast at this, which makes me think that this is also something that was not planned, that maybe Eileen was not expecting this. Eileen was not expecting to be, like...
So here's the thing, though. I think the fact that the judges intervened with Charlie and Mario and they didn't intervene here indicates that this was planned and this was a direction that Lily Mae was given. I'm also hoping that, like, when Lily Mae went after Eileen, this was after something we don't see, where Lily Mae is like, hey, do you want me to say nasty stuff to you? And Eileen said, yeah. Because, again, I do get the sense that Eileen is one of those people who is game for anything. Is it possible that Lily Mae crossed the line in the stuff she was saying? Absolutely. Because they do not follow up on this.
Yeah.
That being said, like, once the scene is done, Lily Mae immediately helps Eileen to her feet, and they both hug each other. And Eileen seems fine. I don't know if this is a brave face, or I don't know if this is just them being actors, and it's like, okay, you got me into the space, now we're done, now we're okay again, cool down.
I would love for that to be the situation.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I am laying all of this out so that it isn't, like, we have as full a context as we can get, and that we're not, like, assigning Lily Mae as the villain in this situation.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's very possible that it is just good acting of a very scary, frightening scene.
Yes.
It is the hope that Eileen was aware that this was coming. And that they were okay after. Because I don't think they did. Again, if they show it on the show afterwards, whether they do or not, doesn't mean anything, because it could have been something that happened and then they just didn't put it in the show. It is very possible that afterwards, maybe Eileen did like feel uneasy around Lily Mae. Maybe they had to have a talk, and maybe Eileen said, hey, you did go too far. But we don't get a follow-up on any of that. All we have to go on is what we saw. But I am giving a bit more of a charitable reading.
I was going to say, my note for this was where are the safety tools?
That is the other thing. It very much feels like the kids had to bring their own safety tools. And it does seem like they were able to make a decent use out of them, because no one felt... It doesn't look like Evan felt super, super, like, drained and horrified afterwards. But again, it's just we can only go by what we saw. And the season two cast have not given nearly as many interviews.
Yeah. Season two cast of The Glee Project, if you're listening to this, I really hope...
Y'all good? Y'all okay?
Yeah, I hope that you all are okay. I hope that nothing that happened on the show was traumatizing to you, because I'm horrified if any of this was unplanned and undiscussed beforehand.
Yes.
Before you started the scene.
Yeah. I'm just, as far as I can tell, either it was planned before between Eileen and Lily Mae, or if it wasn't planned, they buried the hatchet afterwards and there was an understanding between them that it was just for the screen. Also, don't do it again.
Yeah. And then we see the music video, which I summarized initially as, they get bullied.
They sure get bullied.
Charlie gets pushed to the ground. Blake gets beaten up in a stairwell.
Yes. Harper's locker is, I think, filled with whipped cream?
With shaving cream, I think.
Oh, shaving cream. Okay.
And, like, wet paper.
Lily Mae gets a text on her flip phone that says, Lily Mae is a slut! And maybe it's just the fact that we were appreciating Eileen all of last episode, but that truly does not land for me.
Yeah. They ended up using a take where Mario is getting shoved into a fence instead of getting his cane taken away.
Yeah, which I think was probably the intent of the whole scene to begin with.
Yeah. Tyler is still sat on a bench, but then everyone stands together on a stage and holds hands, so it's okay!
Mm-hmm.
And only Abraham is shown actually standing up for himself. He, like, pushes the bullies away and, like, walks off. And Nelly sounds great.
Nelly sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the weeds of the bottoms, I haven't mentioned this season yet, but remember when I had my own fanfic of season 4, and then while I was writing it, I was also writing a fanfic of the Glee Project season 3, where people had submitted their characters for me to put into my fanfic?
I didn't remember that part, but yes.
Okay, so I had a fanfic of season 3 that was a submit your own character tournament, and I had a whole bunch of characters, and I only got as far as the first two episodes and the first chapter of the third episode. So I got through Individuality, Tenacity, and the first chapter of Danceability. But I had plans for all the other songs, and the plan for Vulnerability, the song was going to be Move Along, and it was going to be very similar to the Move Along by the All-American Rejects, in case, you know, you don't appreciate culture.
I do. Well, you gotta keep it strong. Move along, like I know you do.
Exactly. And my concept for that music video was that, yeah, they were still going to be bullied, but then they would come and they'd help each other, and they would lift each other up. And I think that would have been a better premise for this music video, because it makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm better at this.
Yes, you are.
Time for bottoms.
Yeah, well, the best was Blake.
Yeah, okay.
They also said that Abraham and Michael and Harper and Eileen and Tyler were good, so they get through immediately. Then they get to the bottom five, and they tell Nally that she needs to commit more to what she's doing, and she's like, I have anxiety about failing at doing things in front of people, and same.
Yeah, but again, they say that you kind of do, you're going to be on Glee, you will need to make a bit of a fool of yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to be on Glee, the clown show? Have you seen Glee? Do you know what kinds of things Ryan Murphy makes people do? It's less strange than it will be on Riverdale, but it'll still be weird. They say, Lily, you were having problems with lip syncing. Charlie, you stole Mario's cane. And he says, like, and I have realized that that is wrong. And he apologizes to Mario, who does not respond in the footage.
Allie was too perky.
Yes. And Mario was pitchy.
Yeah, and, oh yeah, so, and then Nikki also said, here, Nikki says, you need to retrain yourself. And so, yes, earlier, Mario said the wrong thing. Here, Nikki definitely said the wrong thing.
Yeah. I forget who said something that started out this conversation point, but Nikki, at some point, points out fairly that this is not the Glee audition and everyone's going straight to Glee. This is the Glee project. You're here to train before, like, yes. the job application, before
well,
the final
Well, it came
after audition.
This conversation, because, yeah, they, like, the, Mario was told why he's low, and the Nikki says you need to retrain yourself, and this is where Mario explains that, like, when he said that he was classically trained in the booth, he was trying to assure her that he could get this. He wasn't trying to say, well, actually, I'm perfect because I'm classically trained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, like, I think it is kind of disrespectful for Nikki to be like, I think you were trained wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Classically trained in shit, quote Nikki.
And this is the part where Nikki says, let's be clear, none of you are ready.
Yes.
And so, yeah, and my note here is like, yeah, maybe Mario did talk back a little bit, but, like, Nikki was wrong to say he was improperly trained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, so the bottoms are going to be Lily, Mae, Charlie, and Mario. I think it's rude of them. So, yeah, Charlie obviously should have been the bottom. Like, I agree with that. I think it's rude of them to put Mario in the bottom with Charlie.
Yeah. Well, who would you have put in the bottom then? Would you have put Allie in the bottom?
I would have put Allie in the bottom. And then I don't know if I would have put Nelly in the bottom instead of Lily Mae or not. Because I think they put Lily Mae in the bottom for the right reasons and then they give her the wrong song.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I guess maybe ultimately it was correct to, like, put Lily Mae in instead of Nelly because Nelly has already proved that, like, vocally she's very good. Mind you, Lily Mae has also proven she's vocally very good. So I know. Here's the problem with the bottom is that the bottom is just singing. It's just singing. So if you have a problem with someone's acting and then you put them in the bottom and they sing good, you're still not testing if they're getting better at their acting.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what it is? It's like Drag Race. RuPaul's Drag Race, All-Star Season 7, All-Winner Season, baby, had the final two was Monet Exchange and Jinx Monsoon. And Jinx Monsoon had been cleaning up the whole season. And the only reason Monet Exchange was there is because she was almost as good as Jinx Monsoon. And so they had a final lip sync. Can't remember what the song was. It doesn't matter. Because the fact of the matter is that Jinx Monsoon is not as strong at lip syncs because she has several, like, chronic pain issues. Whereas Monet Exchange does not. So Monet Exchange is very good at lip syncs and being very dramatic and stuff. Ultimately, Jinx Monsoon wins. Which is correct for when you look at the whole season, but that's the thing, is that if you're going to be basing the winner off of looking at their performance the whole season, you can't judge them solely based on a lip sync, and it's a similar problem here in the Glee project, where if you're going to be basing whether this person stays or goes based on a song they're singing, then it doesn't matter if they're singing a song when the thing that you were concerned about was their acting ability.
Yeah.
Anyways, time for the adventures of really nice guy and his partner, Charlie.
Yeah. And I got a picture of this one, too.
Yeah.
I actually got two.
It is Blake and Charlie running around with their boxers over their pants and socks as gloves.
And, like, capes made out of bath towels, and they're wearing, like, socks on their hands.
Charlie has borrowed someone's bra. I feel like it's Eileen's, just because that makes it funnier.
Yes, I feel like it's Eileen's, and, like, everyone is sitting outside in the part of the set that is pretending to be outside, and Blake and Charlie burst through the door into the, quote, outside with a big high jump kick, and they're, like, posing, like, we are here to resolve conflicts about who is doing the dishes and who ate the pasta! And they kind of just, like, parkour around the space while everyone else is dying, and then they, like, jump off the door before they open it and run back inside. And it's like, theater kids!
I need to know if Charlie went to Eileen and said, hey, can I borrow your bra? It's for a bit.
I mean, I feel like being theater kids, you could say that and they'd be like, hell yeah, man.
And then 5 minutes later, this happens.
And, like, in one of the screen caps that I posted that we might have to make the episode picture, like, Charlie and Blake are posing and you can just see, like, Eileen in the background, like, bent over double.
Yeah.
And also, like, Mario is sitting there and it's like, what does he think is going on? Like, did the others tell him, like, they are wearing their clothes wrong? But it's just, it's theater kids. Affectionate.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, time for Lily Mae. Her song is Mercy by Duffy.
Mm-hmm.
She sings it real good. But then Ryan says, this show is about underdogs and you are not an underdog.
Yes.
And then she has a mini breakdown.
Yes, and Lily mentions that the type of songs that do the best to show her vulnerability are ballads, and, like, being able to leave her heart on the stage. And they're like, wow, we've never seen this side of you before. And she's like, I'm not just, you know, the big confident girl who does a dance move where she does the tip pop dance move and is confident. I have emotions as well. And also, Ryan Murphy, I love you. Goodbye.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's the thing. Like, they just picked a really bad song for her to sing. If they were concerned that she was just going to be super strong and sexy and sassy, then they shouldn't have given her a super strong, sexy, sassy song.
Yeah. It's kind of like,
I don't know what I expected.
But yeah, it's like, she has her mini breakdown and Ryan's like, I'm glad, now I see you, now I see all the real you inside. And this is why I sent you that Family Guy clip, the one Family Guy clip that always lives in my mind.
Yeah.
Please play it here.
Oh, there, there, let me dry those tears. Yes, yes, your anguish sustains me.
You should also put that in the group chat.
Yes.
Emily has it too.
I'm making notes, and I'm going to share in the group chat when it actually gets closer to editing the episode, because we are actually very far ahead, especially because I just realized I forgot for 2 weeks to post the new episode of Eidolon.
Oh no! It'll be okay. But yeah, the next is Charlie, who is going to perform Fix You by Coldplay. And when they told him that he was going to be singing Fix You by Coldplay, he did a little dance because he was happy and he knew the song.
Yeah, but you know what? No one else knows this song, because guess what? He's going to hit us with the rearrangement. Ooh!
Yeah, and real quick, I do want to mention that when Ryan Murphy is like, and why is Charlie in the bottom three? Robert says he, quote, made some weird choices during the shoot. And not in a moment of bad improv. He stole Mario's cane during a scene without asking beforehand. Which I feel like that would be more true instead of, oh, he made some weird choices.
I gotta assume that they elaborated on that.
I would hope so.
And we just didn't see it, but yeah. Yeah.
But hey, unsurprising take. Charlie sings this song better than Matthew Morrison does!
Yes. And again, he hit us with the rearrangement. Ooh.
Yes. It is not a very high bar to surpass, but he surpassed it very high.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't tell if Nikki was really into it or really hating it. There's a shot of her leaned back in her chair with, like, her head, like, fully tilted back, like,
I would like to think she hated it because I have been too nice to her for these past two episodes.
Yeah. Oh, and also Charlie gets a really nice moment with falsetto at the end.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, nice. And I forget what the context is, but this is where Ryan Murphy says, we don't want to be a damn karaoke show about Glee, the TV show, which made a significant amount of revenue with karaoke versions of the tracks used in the show.
So that's the thing. Yeah, the full sentence is, every note you sang had me nervous, but it all worked out, and don't want to be a damn karaoke show, so you really inspired me.
Cool.
Like, it was a compliment. But yeah, still, really? Karaoke? On Glee?
Ryan Murphy, have you been on set for the last three seasons?
It's more likely than you think.
Yeah. Also, Charlie mentions, like, yeah, that was a very bad choice on my part, and I'm not as skilled with film acting, and I'm going to do better in the future. Good. And then it's Mario's turn, and he's going to be singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. The version by Judy Garland or the version by Iz? Both!
Hey, does this feel like a microaggression?
What, like, the inspirational disabled person trope?
Yeah, kind of. And especially because it's like, Charlie gets a song that he's clearly, like, even if he didn't rearrange it, he's clearly going to excel at it. And Lily Mae gets a song that matches the personality that she's been giving out. And then Mario, who, like, he sings it very well, obviously, but yeah. It is very much like, and here's this sad, emotional, very twee song.
Yeah, kind of. But at the same time, like, I also couldn't think of any songs that I would have had him sing instead.
It just felt a little condescending.
Yeah. He sounds odd pitch to me.
Yeah. Mario, he also elaborates that, like, there's a lot of electronic interference in the recording booth that interfered with him. And again, he was trying to assure Nikki that he could hit the notes the way she wanted him to.
Yeah. And Nikki mentions that, like, a lot of classically trained singers do have issues when they are asked to sing in a recording studio. So, like, this isn't just a you issue. So, yes. Like, then maybe make it less of a you issue, Nikki. Maybe you should have said that in the booth.
Exactly.
And Mario also, he's also very polite. And I mean, saying, like, when Ryan Murphy is like, so I heard that you took being told that you were pitchy as a personal attack or something like that.
Yeah, come on,
and
Ryan.
Yeah.
Get over yourself, Ryan.
And, like, Mario is like, oh, no, sir, I didn't mean that, not at all. And I'm like, you don't have to call Ryan Murphy, sir.
Yeah.
He does not deserve that much respect.
Yeah, it felt, this whole thing felt kind of hinky.
Yeah, and Mario also apologizes to Nikki, who accepts his apology. And then as Mario goes to walk off stage, Charlie comes out and offers him his elbow.
Yeah, so I'm that's like, nice.
Maybe they're on better terms.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
So during the bit where it's like Ryan and the judges are debating who should stay and who should go, Ryan says he thinks Charlie is too intellectual, and this also feels like a microaggression.
Yeah, like, hey, you know he's autistic, right? That's like the whole thing. That's our whole thing.
It'd be like if we could, might as well just call him articulate, like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and then, okay, so then Mario, there's a bit of a spat between Mario and the others, because he's saying, I was surprised that they called me pitchy, because I thought other people were pitchy. And they're like, no, hang on now. We're trying to encourage each other, and why are you bringing this up?
Yeah, like a point that could be made is, like, I was upset that they said that I, in particular, was pitchy, because I know that everyone can be pitchy sometimes.
Yeah, the charitable reading is, it's just coming out wrong.
Yeah.
And you hope that everyone made up behind camera, and they're just showing this because of the drama. Like, it gets into a whole scene where, like, Mario is saying they're always talking over him, and they're saying that he's talking all over them, and because so much of the show is just the music video stuff, we actually haven't, technically, gotten to see a lot of these people as individuals, unless they end up in the bottom, which means that we truly do not know which one is the truth, or if five is the truth, and people are just assuming the worst of each other.
Yeah, but you know what is true? It's Chilene Watch.
Oh my god, they're head over fucking heels.
Eileen is, like, sitting leaned up against the wall, and Charlie, who has just gotten done singing in a stressful environment for Ryan Murphy and the other judges, is zonked asleep on Eileen's shoulder. And, like, I think he's, like, cuddling onto her bicep or something. Oh yeah, he is. He is cuddling onto her bicep, and I'm like, oh my god, draw your OTP.
Yeah.
It is precious. But then, you know, Robert Ulrich comes in, he's like, hello, we put the list up. And I noticed that when they put the list up on the board, they had it in Braille, and I was like, And then my initial thought was, I know they're not sending Charlie home, because we haven't seen that part in his show yet of him and Eileen, like, kissing in a windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
But then, surprise, nobody's going home.
Yay.
And they sing a very, like, there was something that sounded really weird about this version of Keep Holding On. It's like, the background noise was very strange.
Yeah, and also they have to try and arrange it so all three of them get to sing a part of it, even though none of them are leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so now we get to the everyone's favorite part of the show, since they've been gone. Wait, no one got eliminated.
Yeah, no one got eliminated. We don't have to worry about where anyone went.
Never mind.
I got the picture and I put it in the chat.
Oh, my last note is that when they all realize no one's eliminated, Mario says, somebody kill the Celestial Choirs.
No, somebody cue the Celestial Choirs.
Oh, cue. I thought you said kill.
No. No, cue the Celestial Choirs. And there's a lot of glomping happening as everyone is like, oh my god, you're not going home! Yay!
Kill the Celestial Choirs. Get out of here. No one's leaving. Shut up.
Do you know what I just thought about? Do you think they took the bit with Charlie and Blake being like, hi, I'm good man, and I'm a superhero, and this is my sidekick partner Charlie, who doesn't get a superhero name. Do you think they took that and then you're like, we can make an episode out of this?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're smart enough for that.
But yeah, so that's it. Like, episode over. No one had to go home this time. What a concept. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's it. So, Loser Like Me is a part of the Corner Podcast Network. We can be heard on Podbean and your local podcasting platform of choice. We can be reached at loseyourlikemepod@bisky.social. Or we also have the Corner Podcast Network Tumblr and Discords, both of which can be found via links in the notes. And I know I said earlier that I have this memorized, but I'm realizing that I don't know what part comes next. Is this just next time?
Next time, it's time to fuck.
Oh boy!
Oh, it's also the beginning of the assassination of Nellie Weitenheimer by the coward Ryan Murphy.
Can I abstain from everything except for defending Nellie?
I'm pretty sure we can multitask and, like, defend her on top of everything else.
Cool. I'll defend Nellie. You take care of the sex.
That's my job. That's why you hired me, for the sex.
Tanner, I regret to inform you that neither of us are making any money on this podcast. Should someone just be throwing money at us? Yes. Who? I don't know. but turn in next time to find out how much the next episode is going to hurt us. But until then, 3, 2, 1.
And that's what you missed on The Glee Project.
Just go ahead and grab a chair and listen now. As we riff this show, Tanner and Christine are gonna figure out why we love this show. Better grab your golden stars and slushies, cause you're listening to Loser Like Me. Loser Like Me. Loser Like Me.
I was 5 seconds away from saying, may the power protect you.
Hey, I hit that note.
Hey, good job.
I should probably stop my recording, though.
Yes, good idea.